from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when you stood in a pharmacy aisle and you considered the various pill bottles on the shelves. How about activated charcoal? What about wolfsbane? How about emerging herbs or airborne to prevent colds? What works? Americans spend a huge amount of money on medicine, but some of it isn't really medicine. Dr. Ethan Welch is the author of a new book called Quackonomics. He writes that we cannot allow ourselves to be scammed by fake medicine. His book takes aim at CIM, known as complementary and integrative medicine. He breaks down what we know about herbal medicine, aromatherapy, homeopathy, acupuncture, and more. Dr. Welch concludes that unscientific healthcare costs us $40 billion, with tens of billions more embedded in a system that sees billing fraud, outrageous drug pricing, and scams. So at the heart of this is a question. How can we become better consumers? Our guest this hour is the author, Dr. Ethan Welch, the author of Quackonomics, The Cost of Unscientific Healthcare in the U.S. Dr. Welch, welcome to the program.
It's nice to be with you.
Why don't you let our listeners know what your own medical credentials are, and we'll dive right in, Doctor.
Well, my own medical credentials are as follows. I graduated from college in 1953, and then went to medical school and graduated from Johns Hopkins Medical School in 1957. I did an internship in general surgery and the rest of my general surgery and early vascular work was done at Bellevue. I then had to serve 2 years. I was in the Barry plan at the time, and I served 2 years in the U.S. Public Health Service as a lieutenant commander. I served 1 year at the Marine Hospital on Staten Island and a year at the Marine Hospital in Galveston, Texas. From which I came to Rochester and was able to get an appointment through the good graces of the then chief of surgery at Strong, Dr. Charles Robb. I worked as a director of surgical education then at St. Mary's and stayed in Rochester for 2 years doing general surgery and vascular surgery. I then went away to Cincinnati for a fellowship and then came back in 66 and did vascular surgery as a specialty, operating at all the hospitals at one time or other until I retired in 1995.
So, Dr. Welch, what made you want to write this book now? Why Quackonomics, The Cost of Unscientific Healthcare in the United States Now?
Well, the first reason is that I wanted to counter this anti-science drift in the United States because it's affecting the practice of medicine. I wanted to share these observations with the public on the extent of the fraud and deception that is in the healthcare system. In addition, I wanted to help us get back on the road to truth and trust. As a professional, I suppose I was able to see things that perhaps our patients could not. But those were fundamentally the reasons.
Okay. Well, I think we can start with a listener question that will help us frame exactly what you're trying to do, because one of the things we're going to talk about this hour is the scientific illiteracy of the American people. We're going to talk about how we, when I say we, non-scientists think differently than scientists. We'll talk about how everything is essentially medicalized, especially food these days. We buy into the Oprah effect, the Dr. Oz's sort of the celebrity medicine instead of scientific medicine. And then we're going to really dig into the unscientific treatments, the various CIM, and we'll work through those. But I think this phone call from Rich will help us get started. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Good, sir.
I have been struggling with this with friends because I have a friend who has dealt with some really severe pain, and in her desperation, she's going to acupuncture and stuff like that. And I've tried to present the evidence of where acupuncture, its history and how it's quackery, But in their desperation, and then also the anecdotal stories, well, you know, I tried it and I stopped smoking. I tried it and the pain went away, is a really hard thing to battle. And I listen to science-based medicine. I read that all the time, and I'm a huge fan of Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I try to live my life evidence-based, but I think when people get desperate, they'll go for anything almost. And then also, why is our system allowing these things that aren't evidence-based in there? It's just...
Well, so
it's a frustrating thing to watch.
So, Rich, there's two questions there, and I want to ask you one follow-up before I turn to Dr. Welch. So... Let's say your friend who wants to go to acupuncture, let me give you a brief story, Rich, that might sort of line up with what your friend went through, and then we'll talk a little bit about this. So I've been living with migraines for years, and I had a day years ago where I got a migraine started. I get oral warnings, and so I knew it was coming. It was a terrible time for what I had scheduled for work that day. I just couldn't be laid up with a migraine. And so I called a friend who does acupuncture, and I said, okay, there's no atheists in a foxhole. I'll try anything. And I went, and for the first time in my life, I got acupuncture. And in 45 minutes, Rich, I mean, I had never felt better. I went out there. I have never come close to dunking a basketball. I thought I could do it. I definitely couldn't. I have no ability in that regard, but I felt great. So the next time I was in that situation, maybe a month later, I called the same person. Went to get acupuncture, hoped for the same result. It had no effect. I was laid up all day with a terrible migraine. I don't know if it was placebo that helped me that first time. I don't know what dynamics were in play that ended up impacting me. I didn't really care. If I could activate placebo with a snap of my finger, I'd do it anyway. And we'll talk to Dr. Welch about that too. But Rich, if you've got a friend who wants to try anything and she's that open-minded, couldn't even placebo be in play? Is that potentially a positive thing?
Yeah, to a point, but to you just made the point, the problem with placebo. It's an inconsistent thing, and it's more to your mindset at the time. But yet the underlying problem is still there. I don't know if a placebo is worth $300 every time you go to some quack doctor. So that's the question. Is it worth it?
Okay, Rich, thanks for the phone call. So let's hit 2 points with Dr. Welch on that then, because this is really the core of so much of what Quackonomics is all about here. It's understanding what is and what is not medicine, what is and is not scientific, what is a placebo effect, why do we spend money on this? And then Rich's second question, which we'll get to, is why is this allowed if it's, in Rich's words, quackery? So Dr. Welch, he's saying he's trying to persuade his friend not to go spend money on acupuncture because he sees it as quackery. Let's start there. Is that a wise move to tell your friend don't waste your money on that?
Well, I spent a good deal if you want to read on acupuncture, because it is together with a couple other items the only treatment modality that is any remuneration under the Medicare and some Medicaid. So I think what I did is I looked at this from the point of view of a broad perspective and the history of it. And in fact, all of these areas, I looked at the history very carefully and in the book carefully documented where these things came from. And I want to sum that up with the acupuncture area as being what I call cultural hypnosis. It came out of China, and the basic premise is that if you can convince a couple of billion people that if you put a needle in my left earlobe, it'll take care of pain in my right foot. And if you do that, a certain number of people, the pain will go away because they had, as a precondition, an expectation. I also spent a good deal of time on the placebo effect and what the research is on that. And so I think the important thing is that this was a modality that came out of an age of China, which well before science ever appeared. And I think it's important to know that, because the Chinese had a restriction for way into the almost 20th century against doing autopsies on people. So they had no understanding of the nervous system whatsoever. So I think the worst of that is the idea that you cannot predict a placebo effect in any one instance. And I think that your story, Evan, is an example of that. And the second worst thing about it is that there's an element of deception. I gave examples of acupuncturists who tell the patient that Western society knows nothing about melanomas, for example, and I'm going to cure you. That kind of thing is I think, one of the very basic deceptions in quackonomics. So it's costing us a pretty close to $1 billion a year out-of-pocket expenses for acupuncture, and the literature is just not there that there is any science to it. I'm not against studying it. I think if we wanted to continue to do so, I think we should, but the science is not there.
Well, Dr. Welch, there is sort of a growing call for those who use these kinds of remedies or ostensible remedies, claiming that you can't just look at scientific study, that science can't answer every question. So there is, I think there's at least a concession that so much of what we see in homeopathy or alternative treatments does not lead to replicable results scientifically. But the proponents for it say, scientists can't answer every question, and you can't always know why something works. The key is whether it can provide results for people. Do you feel that there has to be duplicated results scientifically before we can call something medicine?
I do. I think one of the most important criteria of the scientific method, and I spent a whole chapter in the initial part on the scientific method, because as you point out, this is at the crux of it. The scientific method demands that not only do you show your result, but you have to show that it can be repeated, that a independent lab or an independent study can come up with the same result, given that they followed everything exactly and precisely as prescribed. So what makes science science is the reproducibility of it. If it didn't, it would be crazy. You could build an atomic bomb and it would work, and the next one, oh, wait a minute, that didn't work. Well, there must be something wrong. Science is a very demanding and a very, very exacting activity. And I think that it has to be understood and trusted by our people, and return of trust is something that's part of this as well.
Talking to Dr. Ethan Welch, who is the author of Quackonomics, The Cost of Unscientific Healthcare in the U.S. You write about the scientific illiteracy of the American people. I want to read a little bit of what you write about that specifically. Let me read from your book now. Quote, anti-intellectualism has been a detrimental force against raising the level of understanding of science and the scientific method. Richard Hofstadter, an American mid-20th century historian, pointed to the great irony, quote, that the United States was founded by intellectuals, for throughout most of our political history, the intellectual has been an outsider, a servant, or a scapegoat. And he pointed out that while most of the founding fathers were still alive, a reputation for intellect became a political disadvantage, end quote. So anti-intellectualism goes back a lot farther than many people may assume, because it certainly feels, at least right now, that anti-intellectualism has a lot of power and has a lot of currency in the political game. But from your perspective as a doctor, what is the cost to our society that anti-intellectualism still has so much currency in the modern conversation?
And the lack of trust. That is an important ingredient in any relationship, but particularly in a relationship between medicine and the purveyors of medicine and the public and the patients. it's interesting that this concept of anti-intellectualism was a part of our early history. And I think the author that you cited, Hofstadter, was an excellent purveyor of that information. He traces where it came from, and part of it had to do with the fact that many of our early religious sects were the authors of work and also the founders of many of our early schools, in which anti-intellectualism was part of their net result in the graduate programs. So it's been with us a long time. The only thing that I bemoan is it seems to be getting worse, and particularly in the last several years, and particularly, of course, in this administration where trust has been shredded.
Talking to Dr. Ethan Welch, listeners, if you have comments about, I'd love to know if you have tried these alternative treatments, home remedies, homeopathy, if you think that they work for you, if you view them perhaps differently than the author is saying, and if you want to engage on that subject, or if you view yourself as a consumer who could stand to improve in terms of how you understand what medicine is and isn't. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking to Dr. Ethan Welch. And when it comes to how scientists think versus how the rest of us think, there's a wide, wide gap. And one of the reasons that Dr. Welch says that gap exists, it's because we have bought into the medicalization of everything. I mean, even food is heavily medicalized. And we also look to entertainment instead of science. One of the chief examples you give is the Oprah effect in Dr. Oz. Now, I think you're actually quite fair in your treatment of Dr. Oz in your book. You point to some who have gently defended him, but the critics have been really rough on Dr. Oz over the years because Dr. Oz has promoted junk science time and time again. Why do you think that is not disqualifying, Dr. Welch? Why has he remained so popular?
Well, I think first of all, you have to realize that the Dr. Oz's business right now is not medicine. Dr. Oz's business is show business. And I think that explains it.
It's entertainment.
Yeah. He has a huge following. I think certainly we give credit to that and to his mentor, Oprah. And so I think that there's no backup, shall we say, that says, well, just wait a minute, I don't believe that, or there's nobody that's going to stand on the stage and question this or that. And we always have to do it in a secondary manner. And certainly his performance in the area of diet and diet control is pretty abominable, because you just can't find, at least I can't find, and that's another subject we can talk about, I cannot find any original science papers backing up many of these claims. So yet he's a likable person. I think he's somebody that I would enjoy meeting, but you've got to question the science of it. It always comes back to show me the science of it. What are the results? And where is it published? And by whom? And has it been repeated? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you, before I get to some phone calls, you're making an important point about Dr. Oz in that he is a doctor, but in his current role for society, he's an entertainer. His business is ratings and book sales. And so I take that point. Whereas health professionals right now who are trying to help us through a pandemic are very much doctors. Just today, on a call with his staff, President Trump had this to say about health officials. He says, the American public is tired of them. They're idiots. Trump said this about, according to Maggie Haberman of the New York Times, he says, Dr. Anthony Fauci is a disaster. Every time he goes on TV, it's a bomb, but it'd be a bigger bomb if I fired him. Says that he's always wrong and that there'd be 500,000 or 700,000 dead if he had listened to Dr. Fauci. Again, The president stressed that the health professionals dealing with the pandemic are idiots, end quote. What does that do to public trust, Dr. Welch?
Okay. I think that's most easily understood if you realize that the American public, at the level they have of science, also includes their understanding and knowledge of mental health. Donald Trump is, I think, and I think you'll find many psychiatrists who don't dare to speak up, is what's called a grandiose or a malignant narcissist. Now, this information and this study that I'm quoting now was published not by the psychiatrist. It was published by management business people from the Stanford Business School, who did a very exhaustive study that said, in addition to the 9 points that make the diagnosis of grandiose narcissism, is a 10th one, which is making wrong and faulty decisions. Imagine, that is part of this syndrome. It's much easier to understand the president when you can understand that this man may very well, and I believe, be a rather sick fellow. And he has no business being president of the United States. And the fact that he's demonstrating these particular attributes is nothing more than an affirmation of the studies done at Stanford.
Talking to Dr. Ethan Welch, the author of Quackonomics, The Cost of Unscientific Healthcare in the United States. We've got a lot of phone calls from listeners who want to weigh in on various subjects. Joan in Pittsford is next. Go ahead, Joan.
Hello. I am interested in hearing your input on chiropractic. My experience is that I use a chiropractor that my own Western medicine doctor uses, and I had trouble with my knee, and he was able to realign it, and I was fine.
Okay.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, Dr. Welch?
Yes. Well, I think the caller would be most interested in reading the rather long chapter on chiropractic, because I think the best way to understand chiropractic is to understand the history of it. And I go through the history. It was founded in the late 1800s by a David Palmer out in the Davenport, Iowa, who is known as, in the community as a magnetic healer. He originally wanted to make it a religion, and he called all of his diseases that he could name misaligned spines. The subluxation is a term that now is being used. This notion is, as we know, without validity, although there are still people who believe in it and are called the straights, and the other ones in chiropractic are called the mixers. It's true, I think, also to note in this book that I talked about, the patients with low back pain, neck pain, and joint pains are mostly the patients that come to the chiropractor. And I'm not saying that they don't do anything good. What I'm saying is, where is the science? And
well, I'm with,
we have
do you,
to look
do
at
you believe
where,
that,
where the science is, because the science is very, very questionable in many areas, particularly as a part of what we call CAM, or complementary and integrative medicine.
Okay, go ahead, Joan.
My last component here is, so do you believe that bodies or body structure does not go out of alignment over time?
Well,
for instance, the knee, let's not start with the whole skeleton.
Okay,
but
well, I think the thing you have to do with chiropractic is stick with the science of it. Keep asking the question, is there a science and what is it and where did it come from? If you do that, then I think you will find answers to your questions other than what might not be to your satisfaction what I say today.
Yeah, well, I'm asking you something you haven't answered, which was, do you believe the body can, parts of the body can be realigned?
I don't believe that as a basic cause of disease. I think you have to have an incredible amount of force. It happens in accidents and whatnot, where you actually get vertebrae that are literally traumatically knocked out of line. Well,
and the knee over 70 years.
But I can say that right now that I don't believe it is a common event. I think it's overread.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
Okay.
Let's take our only break of the hour. We're going to come back to your phone calls because a lot of listeners are. I'm going to admit it, Dr. Welch, kind of like I was, because I told the story about how I went to an acupuncturist when I had a migraine. I was desperate. I've told the story on this program in the past about going to a chiropractor here and there myself, trying to find preventative treatment for migraine. When you're desperate, you try just about anything. One of the things that Dr. Welch points out in Quackonomics is that desperation does lead Americans to spend billions upon billions of dollars on treatments that don't really have a scientific basis. And, you know, it was educational for me, so even though it was hard to read at times. But listeners, we'll take more of your calls if you want to push back or if you've got questions for Dr. Welch. Let's take our only break, and we'll come right back to you next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we talk with the candidates for the 138th Assembly District. Democratic incumbent Harry Bronson and Republican Peter Vasquez are vying for that seat. We'll talk to them about their platforms and a number of issues affecting New York State. In our second hour, the United Way of Greater Rochester is heading up a 21-day racial equity challenge. What's in that? What's behind it? We'll talk about how they view the challenge on Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Deborah and Shyla is next. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hi. I just don't know where to begin. It's very disappointing. Not everybody with the degree knows. He's got a very narrow point of view. In medicine, they learn 2 to 4 max hours on health and nutrition. And they're studying disease diagnosis and drug symptom treatment. And all of the, I've been into health since, I don't sell anything. I've been into health since I was 19 and I'm 65. And it's all been like food and lifestyle based. But these modalities that he's talking about are all valid, and I've used them all. And not everything works for everybody. And you have to really educate yourself, and you have to educate yourself about the practitioner that you're going to. I had 3 herbal apprenticeships in California when I lived in California. They were all authors. And folk medicine existed before our medicine, Western medicine, and we get a lot of it from that folk medicine, Native Americans. Pharmaceuticals come from plants. Herbs, plants, fruits.
Deborah, let me ask you a couple quick questions because you're making it some important points here, but I also want to make sure I understand some of where you're coming from. Because my own dispossession, my bias is to be open to all kinds of ideas and all kinds of treatments. And if it works for people, even if it's placebo, I think that's great. As I've said for myself, I've been there. I'm also someone, though, who reads pretty far and wide. And Dr. Welch is basically just distilling what a lot of people in Western medicine say about the kinds of treatments you're talking about that just do not produce replicable scientific results. Why do you think what you are talking about can't be scientifically studied and proven to show that it's actually doing any good?
Well, a lot, you know, I can't answer that question. I'm not qualified to answer that question. A lot of times, personal experience, to me, trumps whatever research paper somebody falls
but
back
that's
on.
But Deborah,
you know,
I don't mean to be rude, but one person's experience is not a scientific study here. We do have to at least try to understand.
Yes, but they're trying to put it in a box. You can't, it's too expansive. You can't put it in a box.
Okay.
A lot of energetic medicine that we use today, aromatherapy, India, acupuncture, China, these ancient cultures that used that master in it. So you just have to make sure the practitioner you're going to is a good one, because they're not all good. A science, you can't, what I'm noticing that he's using, you can't hijack terminology. The virus that's happening right now, very real, very important. You can't hijack that science terminology and placebo and try to dissuade people from real healing modalities. You just can't do it. It's a very narrow focus that he has. A lot of scientists will have a very narrow focus. It doesn't mean that science isn't real. You just can't put everything in a box.
All right.
That's,
I appreciate it,
okay?
Deborah. And I know you're not the only one who feels that way. So let me ask Dr. Welch. Thank you very much for the call, Deborah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dr. Welch, all right. You fired up a lot of people who say that, you know, you are overly narrow in your view of what works. Go ahead.
Well, science can be pretty narrow. That's what it is. Let me just start. She mentioned what she was concerned about were the supplements, and it's important to notice that most of that early stuff, the Chinese medicine, went way back indeed. But I wanted to quote one particular interesting quote that I thought was interesting. That was that. The following quote is, quote, "Even though I believe that we should promote Chinese medicine, I personally do not believe in it." And the author of that quote is Mao Zedong himself, believe it or not. So the point I'm making is that we have a vitamin supplement market, a huge, huge $30, $40 billion market. And the FDA has no jurisdiction over it by law. So it's a wide open thing. It's not it's a lot less restricted than the caller thinks it is. And I put a lengthy chapter in about vitamins and supplements because that is the case. And it was well said by a former FDA head, David Kessler, who said, quote, "Congress has shown little interest in promoting and protecting consumers from hazards of dietary supplements." And I think that's the truth. It's hard to be constructive after hearing the arguments that I just heard. But all I can say is, yes, we're in a box. The box is called a restricted box, but it's a box of rules. It's a box that has been called the scientific method, and it's only a Western development. The scientific method did not come from China. The scientific method did not come from Islam. It came from Western culture over a period of centuries, hard won with long and protracted periods of stress. And I think it's important to get educated to the idea of what that box is, my dear. And I think you'll have a little bit more respect for it.
All right, Yvonne, next in Hilton. I'm sorry, yes. No. Oh, it's our friend. Oh, I know Yvonne. That's a name I know. Hi, Yvonne, in Irondequoit. Go ahead. I was in the wrong town.
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I'd like to say I've not read Dr. Welch's book. I want to compliment your last caller, Deborah, also.
Yes.
Because I'm going to springboard off what she said. I think, first of all, my background, I'm a chemist by training, a statistician, but I've also studied just as a hobby Ayurveda, which is it's a thousands of year old Indian form of the science of wellness, basically. And so I have myself practiced these alternative or, you know, Eastern ways to wellness and prescriptions. However, I deeply respect and agree with Dr. Welch about science and being in a box and being a Western development. I think what is important to separate, though, is that as medicine addresses the individual, the patient, and we're all unique. Each person is unique. So what works for one patient may not work for another patient. For science to be able to collectively address a symptom and do that in a systematic way takes reproducibility. You have to make sure that this Band-Aid or prescription or tincture will work the same on every person. That takes money, and it takes participants. It takes data reduction. It would be a colossal investment of public money to test every single thesis of Eastern medicine as well as the various Western medical breakthroughs or drugs or wood developments, I should say. I hope this is making sense. I think that we're mixing, or we're trying to distill medicine as science, but science is a powerful tool, and we should be respectful of it. The climate change is an example where we're totally missing the boat because there's still non-believers, but yet science does tell us that it is changing. But it's not a unique system. It's a planet, and it is one where we have studied many of its symptoms and know it's the cause. Does that make sense?
I hear you, Yvonne. Let me ask Dr. Welch to respond. Go ahead, Dr. Welch.
Well, I think that's the reason that the NIH was had incorporated in 1995, and I traced that out. This office that does the testing of the so-called complementary and alternative medicine modalities. That's their job. They spent over $2.5 billion since that time, and they've come up with very few of these ideas that your listener just alluded to, namely various forms that can be tried. So I think there'll be, if we take the Chinese pharmacopoeia as existed, we would probably be well into the 4 centuries from now in testing everything that's located in there. So I think that the process is going on, but the idea, I think she's very right, everybody is an individual and acts in a different way, and that's taken into account in the testing mechanisms. So I want to mention, if I might, just before we close it, there are some things that I want to mention that have been alluded to, but I think from a prologue in the book, I want to mention one is, one of the purposes of the book was to educate and make a skeptical consumer even more skeptical. We must fund and strengthen the standards of the FDA so that they will have the tools necessary to test our new products. I also think, and this is a sidelight, but it's important, that we need further research before national legalization of marijuana. I think we need better sourcing and reporting of the news. I think you do a great job, but I think that there can be improvements in news for the consumer. The consumer who reads an item in the newspaper ought to be able to go to the web and find the origin of this, and then find an abstract that's written in English. The abstracts for the public need to be of high standards. And the peer review articles must be very well chosen. I think we have to correct. One of the things that amazed me most in my research on this book was the erosion in medical science journals themselves. It's very, very disturbing. And a lot is being done about it now, but it should be a fact that, again, skepticism is very, very important.
Okay, let me get back to phone calls, and I'm going to go to Patrick in Rochester. Let's go to Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. So I am a doctor of Chinese medicine, and I work with the University of Rochester, credentialed inpatient and outpatient with the OBGYN department. Specifically, I work in labor and delivery, and I'm also a doula and a massage therapist and everything. And I feel like this happens often because I talk to doctors, nurses, other medical providers kind of all day about what I'm doing. And when given enough time, we understand that it's a language barrier. We're not necessarily doing anything different. I'm just saying it one way versus they're saying it a different way. So I think language is a huge portion of this. I also think that I wholeheartedly agree with him on FDA. The supplement market is garbage. Journalism in terms of medicine, you know, it's very showy, but, you know, that's kind of what most journalism has turned into now. But the research is there. There's research. I would point him to Helen Langevin from Harvard. She did a really great fascial muscle tissue stretch reflex test using acupuncture, showing a stretch reflex at the location of insertion. And there's research of chemical changes before, after, tissue changes, kind of all sorts of stuff. And I think part of the issue is language. Again, I think Chinese medicine was co-opted by the New Age movement early on in like the 60s and 70s. And basically it was culturally appropriated, taken completely out of context. Most of these contexts, you know, you hear qi, you hear yin, you hear yang. Those are cultural concepts, not necessarily understandable within the translation of English. You know, each of these concepts is a 5-page paper where it's not necessarily this physical thing. It's this concept. Certain things can be this, certain things can't. It kind of interacts in this way. It's how the body interacts. Like qi, for example, qi equals energy was actually a translation from a French doctor who studied in China in the 30s, where really a better translation is more like function. So when we're talking about, oh, you're qi deficient, you're qi stagnant, you're qi, you know, kind of all these things, it's really talking about the function of that particular organ, that particular tissue. You know, there is some more esoteric type stuff. It was very much a system of observation. It's an observational medicine where you see what happens in the world around you, see what happens in the body, and then you come up with an explanation for it. So you don't come up with an explanation and then do that. You say, well, the body's doing this. It looks like this in nature. So they must be, we'll use the same terminology. So I think oftentimes it's language is the problem, and that it's been co-opted and kind of bastardized by the New Age movement, modern culture, things like that. So our understanding in the context is just completely off. Yeah. And okay. I mean, I work in the hospital system. I work, you know, and then kind of the other argument is insurance. And so insurance companies, they don't want to pay for anything. So for them to want to pay for something, it means there needs to be a critical mass of insurance behind it. And insurance, at least a lot of most private insurances will cover forms of pain. They'll cover nausea. Because those are the ones that have had a critical mass of positive research to show that there are reproducible effects. Let's see.
Well, Patrick, thanks. Let me ask Dr. Welch to respond to what he's heard there. Go ahead, Dr. Welch.
Well, I think I understand this idea of insurance companies covering things. If you listen to Joe Namath, who's doing advertising for the so-called Medicare Advantage plans, you're going to have everything free, including acupuncture or whatever you want. The insurance companies are the last people that I want to judge science with.
Oh, I agree with you on that one.
That's to start with. And right now, they are putting certain modalities in the mix. But for the most part, if you take what is called CAM now, the so-called gamut that I called it in the book, of the 25 most costly ones, only two of them are reimbursable. So it hasn't been a runaway yet, and
hold on, Patrick.
Go ahead, yeah. Dr. Welch. Yeah, you can finish.
The insurance companies have formed a transparency and integrity group, which I think is addressing this issue, and so I think we have certain backstops that will be there when we need them.
Patrick, a final point?
I agree that a lot of the stuff that happens, and I kind of explain this to my patients as well, is just because it's ancient or natural or anything like that doesn't mean it's valid or, you know, works. You know, we even in European medicine, Orthodox medicine, you know, 150 years ago, germs didn't exist and we were bleeding people to death. So, like, things change. Not everything is valid. It needs to have a critical mass of research, time spent to, like, be valid. I'm just kind of making the argument that acupuncture has shown these physiologic changes. You know, maybe not across the board with everything, but again, I don't believe Western medicine is good at treating everything as well. And I think we've kind of seen that with, you know, medical malpractice or mistakes being, you know, up until this year, the third leading cause of death. COVID's been third this year and pushed back to fourth. So we're always learning. And so I think it's valid to be skeptic. I myself am a skeptic even of my own medicine some of the time. But I'm in the research. I'm working with a trusted organization. And I think it's there. It is there. The research is there, okay, in my opinion.
Patrick, thank you for the phone call. And as we get ready to wrap the hour, a couple of questions. Let me just kind of sum up a few questions, and I'll kick to Dr. Welch for his final thoughts on this. Scott and Henrietta called, wanted to thank the doctor for his clear definitions of science and for defending science. Rick in Pittsford agrees with science-based facts but says some science can be questionable. And calling in earlier, Michael in Rochester said that there's been an explosion of knowledge every decade. How do we sort out what is true and what's not? Well, one of the themes in Quackonomics, Dr. Welch says, and scientists will tell you, is what is repeatable, what is measurable, is a good way to help determine what is true and what is not. But I'll ask Dr. Welch to expand on that idea because we've had a couple of listeners asking about it. Go ahead, doctor.
Well, let me finish with the three mysteries that I came up with after writing this book. One is, I cannot understand the refusal to vaccinate children. I just can't understand it. Second, once an unscientific statement is widely dispersed, it is essentially impossible to retract that. And I'm going to use as an example Primogen, which is supposed to be for your brain. It's a fraud, and it's in the courts. And it's been stuck in the courts, and it'll probably be there for a long time. And the final question is a mystery to me, is so many people choose non-science in spite of being taught science. And with that, I thank you for allowing me this opportunity to be with you, Evan.
Dr. Ethan Welch is the author of Quackonomics, The Cost of Unscientific Healthcare in the United States. Thank you, sir. And I know you took a lot of pushback from the audience, but that's part of the deal around here. We have these conversations. Thanks for making the time, Doctor.
No problem.
You got it. Dr. Ethan Welch joining us. And listeners, this conversation is one of many that we have on medicine. And I want to let you know, we're in the middle of a drive for membership here. We try to bring in voices, and respectfully, I think Deborah's phone call, Patrick's phone call, Yvonne's phone call, those are exactly the kind of pushback to a book like this that we ought to have. At least air it out. Talk about where do we misunderstand one another? Where are the gaps in our maybe not finding consensus or failure to understand one another's positions? And then I'll let you decide where you are on that. But I really appreciated those phone calls. Great stuff from the audience, as always. You are the backbone of this program. As we go through the election season, we want to know what you need from Connections and from WXXI. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. And I hope that you are a member of Public Radio. The way to do that this week, this community, we all need one another more than ever. I think we all know why. And we try to find a general idea of what is true and what is not, what is accurate, what is fair. We need public radio, we need great journalism, and we need you and me to support it. I do, and I hope that you are a member as well. And I hope that you can make that phone call at 454-6300. It's 585-454-6300. Or go to WXXINews.org. You can also pledge on the WXXI app. This is the week that for all of those who've said, you know what, I've never done this, this is the time. And I'll be with you from 4 to 6 this afternoon on All Things Considered, making sure we're all doing this together. Until tomorrow on Connections, the engineer is Rob Braden. The producer is Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk to you then on member-supported public radio.